Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Now, the top topics of the week are simple. Oil for war. Should Iraq pay for the war with their oil resources? The second topic is, was the government wrong to raid the polygamous compound? Were they doing it in order to smear Romney? The third topic is, are liberals insane in trying to start a war with China over Tibet when they're against the war in Iraq and Afghanistan? Is Obama the new Chamberlain? Certainly there's a man who will talk to the Hitler of Iran. It sounds like Chamberlain. It walks like Chamberlain. It talks like Chamberlain. It is Chamberlain. Only his name is Obama. Finally, what's the best way to defend your home and family should someone break in? Those were the top stories of the week. Again, if you want to comment on any of them, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. But before I begin on any of these topics, what I'd like to talk about are bad car tires. And the reason I want to talk about bad car tires is because I am so sick and tired of frauds who will not stand by warranties. Let me give you an example. I have a new car. I have less than 2,500 miles on it over a one-year period. The car has Continental tires on it, whatever they are. Now, approximately 3 months ago, a tire on the rear of the car was replaced, and I had an argument with the dealer who said, you're responsible because you cut it, you backed it into a curb. I didn't like hearing that because I assumed that a new car that's very expensive in particular would have tires that have a warranty. He said, no, there's no warranty against road hazards. You're dreaming. I said, okay, I'm not happy, but I'll pay for it. $500, mind you. $500 for one tire. You hear what I just said to you? I'm away for a few days. I come back. I drive my car out of the garage this morning, and I feel the wheel alignment is off. I go to the car wash. The guy at the car wash, the Mexican guy, says to me, you have a bubble in that tire. I said, you're kidding me. Another tire, now the front right tire. I look at it. Sure enough, there's a bubble with no cut in it. Again, the dealer says, you did it. There's no warranty. Again, I pay $500. I said, I'm going to pay it because I need the tire. But this is the last straw. I'm not accepting this. Has anyone out there other than myself had this problem with either Continental or other tire dealers who have suddenly stopped respecting what Americans have come to expect over the last few decades, which is road hazard warranties? What exactly is a road hazard warranty? Tell me what it means if they won't back it up in a situation like this. I didn't buy a jalopy. I bought an expensive car. $500 a tire, two tires, $1,000 after less than a year? You don't want to talk about tires. But you know what? I do. If you want to talk about them, you can call me. If not, we can talk about home defense, oil for war, the polygamous sect, torches in this one, the taxes and blah, blah, blah. Whatever you want. I want to hear some rock and roll, though. Let me go on my website. Give me any rock and roll here, and then I'll look at my website and tell you what else we're going to talk about. Here we go. Tainted Tankers. No rock and roll? Can't figure one out? All right, turn it off. Will you play something with some verve to it? God, wake up over there! What are you doing to me today? Thank you! My dog, a nervous breakdown here. He was sleeping, relaxing. I just gave a scream through the microphone. He jumped. The dog is going to wind up needing a pill after I get through with the show today with the breakdowns. It's a little better now. Oh, please, it's enough with the crackers calling with shotguns. One is enough, not 10 calls on shotguns for the house. This is not a break or two show. Turn it off. Turn it off. I thought I'd coast through today. I knew it. Things never work out the way you want them to. I just tell you, you can't count on anything. A little show breakdown a minute before the show, the lines go down. That's number one. I needed that stress. Now number two, every call now is about the best home defense, and I'm going to hear every nut job in the country. I know what the best home defense is, a shotgun. I did that already. I did it 2 days ago. What do you expect them to say? A BB gun? They're not Charles Schumer. Charles Schumer's idea of home defense is blowing a whistle and calling the ACLU and hiding in his closet. That's the idea, liberal self-defense. We don't want guns in the house because our children are liable to shoot us. Well, we don't want guns in the house because we're liable to shoot our wives, or our wives are liable to shoot us. We don't want guns in the house because we're liable to shoot ourselves, because they're all psycho. They're on drugs. They're depressed. Most liberals are psychopaths because they know they're no good. They know by their behavior they're no good, so they're on medication. Consequently, they're afraid of a gun in the house because they're afraid they'll put it in their mouth and blow their brains out. So, of course, they don't want a gun in the house. A gun is for a stable person, not for a liberal who's unstable. Do you understand that? They shouldn't have guns in the house. Anyone who voted for Bill Clinton should be forbidden to buy a gun, as far as I'm concerned. Anybody who's going to vote for Obama should be banned from buying shoes, let alone guns. They should be given sandals and a one-way ticket to a beard store. Oil for war. Tainted tankers, why the Pentagon gave contract to France, not Boeing. It's up on michaelsavage.com. You don't care about that. Why would you not care about that? Why would you not care about turning the future of a vital tool in our Air Force over to bureaucrats and politicians in France rather than Boeing? Now, I told you when this happened that there were allegations that McCain had lobbied on behalf not of Boeing, but on behalf of France. He will not come on this show to meet the Savage Nation, which leads us to assume there's truth to it. Next story underneath that one, white trash billionaires caught smuggling crack. Oh, this is so rife with depth and dexterity. There's dexterity in this. It is a dexterous story. It has hands. Not only does it have feet, this story has hands. That's why I say the story has dexterity. It is the correct word if you know how to use words. It came from the New York Post this morning. I almost said socialists. You know, it may as well be socialite smuggling bust. It could be socialists smuggling bust. Have you ever noticed that the more money they have, the more socialist they are? Why is that? Answer, you people don't understand that. You think that only poor people want socialism. What you don't know is that Leninism is about billionaires and the power mad to run your life with no votes, no elections. You have no say in your life. They're smarter than you, so they run your life. The American-born wife of a British billionaire was busted after she allegedly tried to smuggle crack cocaine and heroin into an event at the U.S. Embassy in London. You know why this story has hands and feet? Here's a socialite, so-called, who's married to the guy Hans Rausing, the wife of a drink carton fortune, whatever that drink carton fortune. His father had the brains to invent a drink carton. He had no brains, and all he did was spend the money. But his wife says, I have made a grave error after her arrest on drug charges. You see, she was nailed going through security at the heavily guarded embassy. Guards stopped her, searched her, discovered several wraps of the illicit drug in her handbag. Then they went and checked out on her hubby. They raided their $10 million five-story townhouse in London's Chelsea neighborhood, and they found another $5,000 worth of drugs stashed away. Now, the husband, Hans, was not at the embassy function, but both he and his wife, the parents of four young kids, nevertheless, were both hauled in for questioning by London's Metro Police and booked for possession. Let me ask you something. Why do you suppose people of this caliber need these kinds of drugs? They're going to a U.S. embassy dinner that you or I wouldn't be invited to, with all of the lowest scum on the planet attending. The lowest scum. You see, many of you don't understand. You think that if you were invited to a society dinner, you're involved with the cream of the crop. You're involved with the scum of the crop. I don't think you understand that. You have a better chance of meeting decent people in a trailer park than you do at an embassy function. Don't you understand who these people are behind all of those fancy suits and those smug smiles? There's nothing but vermin and scum. And they run your life, unfortunately. Albany, New York. Dave, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Dr. Savage, let me tell you about the tires. First of all, even though you bought a very expensive car, these dealers and these companies put seconds on the car. They're not a first-line tire, no matter what manufacturer you get. And I would recommend that you go right directly to, what was it, Continental?
Yes.
Go right directly to the manufacturer with your argument, and they may do some and reimburse you.
Wait, what do you mean? The dealer bought tires from Continental that were no good?
Well, it wasn't the dealer. The car may come through with that right from the manufacturer. They buy a lot of tires, and they're almost always new cars come with inferior tires.
I'm telling you, I said that to the dealer because I said, don't give me the story that it's my fault again. I said, I've had cars all my life. I never had tires blow out like this.
I've been in automotive stuff for many years. This is not your fault. This is manufacturing.
That's right. I have a town car, Dave, that I've owned for 6 years. I've hit curbs with it, and the tires don't break.
Good tires. Could I mention a brand name I would recommend?
Yes.
I would go with Michelin XLTs. I have one-ton vans. I've hit everything with them. Those tires will hold up.
Well, I never heard of Continental. Who makes them?
It could be offshore now. It could be made with very substandard.
I can't believe these walls are so weak. I'm telling you, they're unsafe at any speed, in my estimation. How could a car that costs so much money with 2,500 miles have two tires go out in less than a year?
Well, don't fool with these kind of tires. Go with Michelin or something very heavy.
Well, I'm going to contact Continental if I can find out who to contact with. Do I have to call Bangalore and speak to somebody with English as a fifth language?
Right. I know. I know exactly what you're talking about. You need 10-ply E-rated tires. E isn't easy. You need 10-ply tires.
Wait. Tell me that again. They should be what ply?
E-rated. 10-ply E-rated tires on that type of a vehicle.
Okay. E-rated 10-ply. I'm going to tell you right now, the minute I get off the air, now I have a vengeance now. I'm going back to my garage, and I'm going to look with a vengeance. Will it say it on the tire?
Yes. You should look at the rating of the tire. It should be E-rated. It should be a 10-ply tire.
Ah. Well, maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. I'm going to check. But it does say made in Germany. So the Mercedes people are either making them or importing them and putting their name on them. But I'll tell you right now, they're no good. That's all there is to it. Thanks for the call. You see, I knew tires. You know, the fact of the matter is we could talk about all these stories in the world, but everyone listening to the show drives a car. And everyone drives a car and everyone has tires on their car. And everyone thinks about a tire. Why should I have not one but two tires on a new car go out within a year? I'm not a kind of guy who jumps curbs. I'm telling you something's wrong with the tires, and they tell me, oh, there's no road hazard warranty. Well, what is a road hazard warranty? Can anyone explain that to me? Can anyone explain what that means to me? What does a road hazard warranty mean? Doesn't it mean that if it blows up for any reason, you get the tire refunded? Well, what does it mean? What do I need it for then? Something's wrong with this picture. If you want to talk about tires, I'm going to do it. I'll do it for a while. Does anyone know what they're talking about? Deacon, Kansas City, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hey, your last caller was right about the Michelin tire.
Yeah.
I would definitely go with Michelin. It's the kind of car you have. It's a very good tire, and it's based on the consumer report as being a very good tire.
No, I don't have a Michelin. I have a Continental tire.
Yeah, I know, but I would. I've been in the automotive business for a long time, and I've even sold tires for a while, and I would never put Continentals on my car.
All right, why not?
My personal opinion, they have a sidewall problem.
Oh, that's my opinion. The sidewalls are weak, in my opinion. There's two of them now have gone.
And I don't know who makes them. That tire name's been around a while, but I don't know who makes them now. I don't know.
Well, we're going to get to the bottom of it, Deacon. I can guarantee you that I started a snowball here that's going to avalanche on Continental when I get through with them, because I am not going to tolerate this. And if anyone works for Continental, I suggest you pick up the phone and call the Savage Nation at 1-800-449-8255 before we get a congressman investigating your rotten, stinking product. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So you met someone who set you back on your heels. Goody, goody. So you met someone and now you know how it
You know, politics is personal. It's about a tire that stinks. Let me tell you that. You can talk. Okay, turn that off. You could talk about offshoring. You could talk about sending jobs overseas. You could talk about we can't make a tire anymore or a television set. All right, that's all well and good. But when you buy a new car and it costs a lot of money, and within a year, you got two tires that you've had to replace, and both are the same problem of sidewalls, and the dealer says, well, you hit a curb. First one, I didn't, okay, I hit a curb. Now I'm on a vacation for 3 days. I come back. I hit nothing. I drive the car and the sidewall's gone. I noticed there was a little alignment problem. So I said, how could this happen? It was fine in the garage when I drove it in. Now I get to the car wash and they do the dressing of the tire. And luckily the Mexican guy said to me, come here and look at this, blah, blah, blah. I said, what is this? The bubble. Now, if I had not felt the wobble on the wheel or the slight wobble, it wasn't flat, by the way, before going to the car wash, I would have assumed it happened in the car wash on the track. But you have to be rational. You can't just, oh, you didn't. They didn't do it. So it's the tire. Irrespective of where it happened, there was no cut in that rim, in that sidewall. It was like a little bubble already forming. You know, it's like a defective human being, like with a genetic defect. Some people are born with genetic defects. Seems to me some manufacturers now are manufacturing with manufacturing defects. What I'd like is a good shyster lawyer to listen to this show. A real vicious class action shyster of the lowest order. Some red diaper doper baby scum of the lowest order who went to either Columbia or NYU who does this for a living. How's that? I want the lowest of the low. I want somebody I wouldn't even be in the same county with to call the show and sue them for me. Chico, California. Steve, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, three different incidences here. My service truck is a one-ton vehicle. It's got Continentals on it. If you look close to the bead down low to the rim, you'll see it's made in Mexico. My neighbor just got a new Buick. His tire is Continental, made in Mexico. And
okay, it doesn't mean that it's manufactured poorly or any product made there must necessarily be bad. But something's wrong if I have this problem twice now, and others are telling me the same thing. Okay, San Diego, John, go ahead, please. You had the same problem?
Yes, I did, Mike. Back in 2001, I bought a used Buick. It had about 30K on it. I was driving down the freeway, and the tread separated from the tire, flailing the tread against the side of my car. I filed a claim with Continental General Tire. They not only replaced that tire, they replaced all four tires.
Yeah, well, maybe they ought to contact Michael Savage, because I'm talking to a lot of people now, and I'm finding out I'm not alone and that my instincts are not necessarily wrong about weak sidewalls. Something's wrong here, John. You know, where's Ralph Nader now that we need him? Unsafe at Any Speed. Remember that book?
Savage.
You know, I have this thought every once in a while. This one day, the Chinese leadership wakes up and they blink their eyes as if coming out of an enchantment. And they look at each other and they go, oh my God, what have we done? And they look at each other and they say at the same time, let's go talk to the Dalai Lama.
Yeah!
He'll know what to do. And he will know what to do. So I think this exercise...
Right, shut up. Get him off my show. This is the Richard Gere doing an anti-China protest in San Francisco, trying to get a little mileage out of it. He left his gerbil home, apparently, to grab at the torch that was going by. And he got a little mileage out of it. Look at the Dalai Lama. He'll know what to do. The guy almost set off a world war, the Dalai Lama, that troublemaking... I'm not a big fan of the Dalai Lama, let me tell you right now. What would you like to do, you liberal morons? You're against the war in Iraq. You're against the war in Afghanistan. But what? You want a war with China? Schmucks! You don't know what you're doing from day to day. How do you even get up in the morning and wash your body and put clothing on? I don't get it. Richard Gere flies in from L.A., probably on his Gulfstream, to give a speech now in San Francisco about the Dalai Lama and Tibet and China. Well, I'm sorry Tibet was grabbed by China in 1948-49. What are you going to do about it? You want a nuclear exchange with Beijing? Would that be the solution, idiot? It's a done deal. It's over. What would you like now? A Holocaust to occur because of your stupidity? You know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, I'd like to say to these liberals. There's not an issue that they're correct about. Not one. One day they're screaming, no war, bring the troops home, no war, end the endless war. And the other bumper sticker says, free Tibet. How would you like Tibet to be freed? Boots on the ground? Nukes? What would you expect? They're going to just do it because you don't like it? Because you don't feel good about it? The Chinese are going to let go of Tibet. Unbelievable. All right, well, That's the tire. Here's a guy, a friend of mine just wrote me a letter. I think we'll end the tire thing now. And it's a friend of mine at KNEW. I won't say it. Michael Savage. In a previous life, I ran my family's Mercedes dealership for 10 years. We never failed to take every car off the transport and immediately drive over to the Michelin dealer and put new Michelins on. The Continentals and Pirellis, in my opinion, are lower line and the Michelins the factory puts on aren't very good and they wear quickly. I never saw a tire get a bubble in 10 years in the business that wasn't a defect and had nothing to do with driving, hitting a curb, etc. That's nonsense. I knew it. Thanks, thanks, CR. I knew that when I was born yesterday. You know, I'm from New York. Normally, I wouldn't. In the past, I would have, you know, made a big issue of it, but I don't have the time right now. So I figured I'd discuss it with my audience. I'm finding out I'm not alone. So now it's two tires I replaced. I should have got rid of them all at once if they had told me the defective. Oh, I'll deal with it separately. We'll see. So far, we haven't heard from anyone from Continental. But there are other topics. Oh, we got a lawyer. Good. Frank in Ohio, welcome to the Savage Nation. What do you suggest, Frank?
Mike, I do a lot of limit claims out here, and the Ohio consumer law is pretty strong. I'm sure California is even stronger. And under Ohio consumer law, I'm sure California, if there's a defect in your vehicle one time that can cause death or serious bodily injury, which a blowout could do, the manufacturer has to replace your vehicle plus refund all your expenses. And I'm sure you have access to a lot better lawyers than I am. And
The California lemon law is even better than yours. I know a woman who had a Jaguar for 3 years and got a new car based upon a problem that was sort of ongoing. They had to take the whole car back.
That's right, Michael, and that's what I think you should probably pursue, because of course you're Michael Savage, so maybe it's a little different, but in my general experience with people contacting the manufacturer, all they do is just get the runaround. You're better off to just file the claim, and like I said, it's...
Well, what if I don't want the car taken back? I like the car, but I don't like the tires. How do I deal with that?
But the same thing under the lemon law. You don't have to have your car be taken back. But you're entitled to be reimbursed for all of your expenses.
In other words, the part of the car that's defective, I could have them pay for.
Yeah, I think you said you mentioned you spent you're well into over $1,000 now in tires. So
two tires, five. I never heard of a tire for $500.
Insane. But you know what I would do, Mike, is I would file the claim. I would ask for you're entitled to reimbursement for all your expenses, and you're also entitled to your attorney fees as part of your damages.
I'll start with a letter to them wherever they're located, probably in India or China, and we'll see what happens. But thanks, Frank. I will use the lemon law. Let's talk about politics now. I'm glad we touched on the tires. I feel better. You know, the beauty of the radio show is that you get to ask people their experiences on various issues, you know, whatever it may be. But, you know, this is where it goes back rather to a quote I've given on the show for years and years. There was a Roman historian, Cato the Elder. I think there was Cato the Younger, too. I don't know whether it was the Younger or the Elder, but Cato, C-A-T-O, wrote that people are not that interested in where the Roman legions are and what the Roman legions are doing. They're of very, very low interest to them. He said the average Roman cares about the pebble in their shoe. What he meant by that was they cared about bread and butter issues more than they cared about whether the legions were conquering Germania or they were successful in Spain of that day. Great, I'm glad. Hail Maria. What they cared about was whether the price of wheat went up or whether the pasta was any good or tainted in the market. Or they cared about whether the leather shoe they were wearing had a pebble in it, if you know what I'm saying. So when I say I'm talking about a tire on a national radio show, there's a reason for it. And I'll tell you the reason. It's not just that it's personal with me. I've owned cars all my life, and I own other cars. I have never had such a consistent problem as I'm having with these tires. Never. And I'll tell you the truth. I was just visited a relative where my old town car is, which I bought in 02 or 03. It's got 30,000 miles on it. A tank. Never changed a tire on it. The tire, you could jump a curb with it. If you're running around in L.A. and let's say you want to do a U-turn like in The Godfather on the bridge. Good job, you know. Good work, Tony. It's not kind of you could jump over an intersection with this car. The town car. See, I don't like finicky. I'm starting to know that the old way I lived was better. Simple is good. Expensive, complicated is no good. You know, it's like a watch. People draw a $10,000 watch, $20,000 watch. You can't find the handle. You can't see the hands. You're afraid to put it on your hand. You buy a $20 watch. It does the job. I have a pocket watch that I've had for years that someone gave me as a gift. I love this watch. Big handles, big. I think it's a Swiss Army watch that you wind. I like winding watches. And I don't know, this whole thing with more is better and more expensive is better, you know. But if you'd rather talk about Tibet, you can talk about that. How do you feel about that Tibet thing? Do you think we should go to war over Tibet? What exactly is wrong here? What's wrong with my thinking, if anything? What is it that we're going to achieve by antagonizing Beijing? Tell me. KNEW, Udi, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks very much. You know, I listen to you often, and I really agree with the vast majority of your statements. However, Mr. Savage, making the false argument that all Tibet supporters are liberals is unacceptable to me. I happen to be a conservative. I participate in these demonstrations. I support freedom in Tibet. I am certainly not suggesting that we should go to war over that.
All right, so, okay, I accept that you're a man of conscience. Tell me what you hope to achieve by antagonizing Beijing.
It's not a question of antagonizing Beijing. The Olympic Games should go. There should be some protests. I did not want to see the torch going through the streets of San Francisco, just as I do not want to see it going through the streets of Lhasa, Tibet. What I want to do, my goal is, and my other colleagues, is to bring to the world stage the awareness of the atrocities that are occurring in Tibet. And when I say atrocities, what I mean is cultural genocide. I happen to be there, and if you allow me, if I have some time, I can give you a couple of anecdotes. But what
Hold on. But you know, they're not committing genocide in terms of putting people in gas chambers.
No, absolutely not. And I happen to be...
Let's put things in context. I understand what cultural genocide is. They've made the language illegal. They have imposed probably Mandarin, the language Mandarin in the schools. Am I correct?
You're absolutely correct. And
Wait, this was done to the Native Americans, by the way, in 1890, 1920 period. They were not allowed to speak Navajo. They were not allowed to speak the Sioux language. They could not speak the Lakota Sioux language. They were prohibited from practicing their own ways. I understand what a disaster that is for an indigenous culture. Trust me on that one. So you're saying that by protesting, you're hoping there'll be a slight lightening of the hand of Beijing over the Tibetans?
Absolutely. This is not naivete. I'm talking pragmatism here. I am saying, you know, China, take the minerals, take the gold. Do not oppress the people. Do not oppress the culture. You know, what they're doing is, the Communist Party, you know, the atheist entity as it can be, they are interfering in Tibetan cosmology, nothing less than that. They are installing their own monk, quote-unquote, politicians or puppets in the monasteries just to make sure that they can control and make sure that everything is running according to the Chinese book and how they want to shape Tibet. So, Mr. Savage, you know, my greatest concern and you know, I must say, I'm on the brink of tears when you hear about the atrocities that are occurring, the cultural genocide that is occurring in Tibet. It is just unbelievable. Yes,
Udi, let me ask you: would you have the same views about Israel and the so-called occupied territories of the West Bank and Gaza that the Israelis are conducting themselves in the same way as the Chinese on the Palestinians?
I certainly have. I'm far from being a leftist. I certainly have a problem with Israel's occupation of the West Bank when it comes to Hamas.
Wait a minute. So you say you're a conservative, but you're telling me you're on the side of the Palestinians and on the side of the Tibetans. So where do you define yourself as a conservative? On which issues?
I define myself along the lines of, there needs to be a solution for this. I'm all for real politics, pragmatism. Two states, as long as Israel's security is completely guaranteed.
Well, how can you have two states when they were given back a sliver of land called Gaza, and all they've done is lob rockets into Israel, and they visited a seminary a month ago and slaughtered young Jewish boys who were unarmed? How can you make peace with people like that?
Right now there's no peace. Right now there's status quo. There's no.
All right. Well, listen, let me say this. I respect the integrity of your position. It is a little more nuanced than I would have heard from Richard Gere, who did not make the points you made. They made it sound as though it was all or nothing, meaning give us back Tibet or else. You're saying something quite different, which is let go of this imposition, stop imposing the Chinese culture on the Tibetans, let them have their own culture. I didn't hear any of that coming out of the maniacs, Uthi. I wish I had, and I want to thank you for enlightening us on the Savage Nation. I mean that, period, end of story. I learned something. That's all. It's not like I'm glad to see a culture disappear or a language disappear. That's not what I'm saying. We have enough trouble in the world. What do you want done, and how do you intend to achieve this? Do you achieve it by antagonizing Beijing? Maybe. Do you embarrass them before the Olympics? But what is it you're demanding? What are the demands? They're never going to let go of Tibet. Right now, they just got back Hong Kong, what, 5-6 years ago? Next, they're going to take back Taiwan as sure as I'm sitting here. With George Bush, I can guarantee you the deal's already done behind the scenes. We're going to go to war over Taiwan? Are you kidding me? So their intent in China is to keep aggrandizing territory and power and eventually destroy us from within, which, in my opinion, they're not too far from having achieved. They own 52% of our T-bills are controlled by China. They have bought a goodly portion of our technology, including military technology. They've stolen a goodly portion of our high-tech military technology. We're going to wake up one day and we're going to be unable to defend ourselves. That's what's going to happen. Without having fired a shot, what they're doing is they're practicing war by other means. Read Lao Tzu, and you'll understand that the greatest warrior doesn't have to lift his sword. They're much better at it than we are. We have a bunch of morons who go over there on goodwill visits and open up the ships. That Admiral Mullen, that putz, goes over there to China and invites the Chinese on with cameras. Oh, let's have a little banquet here. Yeah, come on down to the reactor, sure. Oh, you mean they gave you no reciprocity, Admiral Putz? Oh, no, but we're working on it through protocol channels. You moron, you. You're not capable of running a rowboat, let alone the Navy. See, this is what goes on here. We have career putzes running everything. That's one man's opinion. If it's a little too hot for you, I can't apologize for myself. I can't apologize for offending you in an attempt to wake you up to the danger we are in. But we can talk about Tibet, tires, anything else with a T? Let me see if I can get some iambic pentameter going here. We can talk about tires or Tibet or tankers. There's three T's. Or white trash. Tires, Tibet, tainted tankers, or white trash billionaires. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Yes, it's me and I'm in love again. Had no love and say you know when. You know I love you.
Yes, I do, and I'm saving all my loving years for you. Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Thanks, Pat. Yeah, play it a little bit longer. What am I going to burn my heart out over this Tibet thing?
Baby, won't you give your love to
some rock and roll, and I want it now. Here's another story just came out. You think you got this Pepsi? Get your beta blockers ready, all right? You're driving in a car, go into the glove compartment, get out the beta blockers, or if you're an asthmatic, get the pump. Here it comes. I'm warning you. Arnold Schwarzenegger, the strudel man, who is the governor of California, has just shifted his homosexual marriage stand. He says that if the people put through an initiative to ban homosexual marriage and it qualifies for the November ballot, he's going to fight it. So he's now in the pocket, or shall I say, in the panties of the homosexual radicals. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger says he's prepared to fight an initiative to ban homosexual marriage. He spoke at a convention of the so-called log cabin Republicans, which, of course, is a misnomer, as you well know. That's to imply that Abraham Lincoln was gay. He has previously vetoed bills that would have legalized homosexual marriage, but no one knows what prompted the so-called governor to shift his so-called position. We don't know whether he wears his position on his left or his right. Schwarzenegger said he was confident a ban would never pass in California and called the effort a waste of time. Oh, yeah, okay, Governor. Now, you got to understand something about this guy. His wife is a diehard Kennedyite, that you know, Maria Shriver. That's okay. It happens to the best of families. But did you know that a few years ago, after posing as a conservative, he hired the former liberal Democrat governor's chief of staff, a radical lesbian herself, to run his the state for him. Do you understand how it's all a charade? Don't you get it yet? How we almost have no chance with these frauds? What, because he looks good in a suit? You think because a guy looks good in a suit, he is what he looks like? Don't assume that because a guy looks like Central Casting, straight up, red, white, and blue, he is. You know what I'm saying? That's all. And you thought it was bad already. Wait, it gets worse. There's more Friday afternoon. The only thing you should say, thank God, is you're not in an American airline flight. American grounds 595 more flights. Look what's going on. Bankruptcy on Wall Street. Bankruptcy in the air. Bankruptcy on the borders. Let's go on. Salmon fishing season canceled. As the Pacific Fishery Management Council votes to ban Chinook fishing off the California and Oregon coast because the salmon stocks were low. That's an amazing story unto itself if you're a boater as I am. No more commercial or recreational salmon fishing allowed off the coast of California, most of Oregon this year. And that's because, why? Why? Who knows why? You want me to give you a few reasons? Well, there's a few reasons. Some of them are environmental, but some of them are because the factory fishing giants are coming in from Asia and other countries and sucking the fish out of the sea like with a vacuum cleaner. That's why. Now, the fact of the matter is there are other reasons, not just the fact that rapacious foreign fishing groups are doing it. There was a fall run in the Sacramento River that was low. The number of spawning fish dropped from more than 800,000 just 6 years ago to just over 68,000 last year. This year, there's going to be only 50,000 fish in the river. Okay. Now, why the great salmon runs are diminishing are multifactorial, the whys. Sudden lack of nutrient-rich deep ocean upwellings caused by ocean temperature changes as a possible cause, which means that it is a combination of factors, including agricultural pollution. That's a terrible thing. Topsoil running into the bay and into the rivers. Water diversions from the delta and damaged habitat. But there may be another reason that they didn't mention, which is undersea volcanic activity, which is raising the heat level.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Two, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me, hon. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes one. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. We're gonna rock, rock, rock till broad daylight. We're gonna rock around the clock tonight.
It is the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday with Rock Around the Clock. Wish life was that simple. It is, basically, if you're a moron, got nothing on your mind, you can live like a happy idiot. It's terrible out there. It's awful. You really study it. I mean, it's like, sew the patient up and send him home, you know. Play the music. Yeah, play him. What do I care? I'll read you the headlines. Don't worry. I'm building up again. You better get your beta blockers ready. Cigarettes, whatever it is you use, whatever drug. So you're in the car, you want a nice, easy ride home. You're not going to get it. Go listen to Mantovani music if you want easy. Go listen to a speech from George Bush if you want fun and nice. Anyway, so here are some of the headlines. Arnold Schwarzenegger, the phony conservative, the phony Republican, the who-knows-what-he-is man, has shifted his gay homosexual marriage stance, saying he'll fight the people if the people want to ban homosexual marriage, he'll fight it. She said, oh, he's changed his mind. Are you kidding me? Changed his mind? He fooled you to get elected. Told you he was different than the last governor, the liberal Democrat. Number two, Bushes pay taxes on $923,000 in income. Well, of course they pay taxes on it. Why is that a story in the Associated Press? That's the cover up that the Clintons made $106 million over a number of years. That already is no longer news. Top aide to al-Sadr assassinated in Iraq. Well, that's something to be celebrating about. Shame they missed the top pig. Clinton misstates wife's Bosnia tale. No kidding. Clinton lied? Whoa. That's news. College students forced to tour Nevada House of Prostitution by the perverts who run the college. Lawsuit says Heath Ledger used cocaine at a party. Shocking. A man who died of a drug overdose used cocaine. I'm just stunned. I would never have expected to read a story such as this, that a drugged up Hollywood moron who died of a drug overdose naked on a bed in the meatpacking district. Pardon me. I'm not using it as a, in the meatpacking district. You want to talk about ironic? Why are they moving into the meatpacking district? Sorry. Let's just let that go. What is it? Why do they want to live in a meatpacking district? Why do they want to live where, like, sides of beef hung there once? Now they want a condo there for $19 million. Legally Blonde golfer, 85, gets ace. Terrific. Florida Supreme Court's first Hispanic. Great. Wonderful. That really means a lot. Oh, his first Hispanic justice to resign in September. Sorry. Why don't you tell me what his politics are and his qualifications rather than his ethnicity? I'm not interested in his ethnicity. Okeechobee, I can never pronounce those Seminole Indian names. Okeechobee County man dies from Africanized bee sting. Let's let that one go, or someone will accuse me of something I'm not guilty of. Bail set for teens accused of Polk County videotape beating. White trash, garbage. What do you expect? They're drugged up lunatics. No goods. Put them in a brothel in Nevada for the rest of their natural life. That's all. Polygamous sect encouraged fear. I don't believe a word about this polygamous sect. It looks to me like they're picking on them because they're, you know, they're a minority sect, period. Zimbabwe bans political rallies. Are you expected more from the ex-Rhodesia, the man who threw whites off their farms? A country that was once not only able to feed its own people, Zimbabwe, but also was a food exporter when the whites ran the farms. When he threw the whites off their own farms, A, they went around with a begging cup, and then the people went into the toilet on top of it all because of this maniac. And what did the UN do? Nothing. What is the UN for? What is that? They can't do anything. Why give them any money? They should have gone in and stopped this a long time ago in Zimbabwe. Anyway, Bush raises cash for GOP. I'm shocked that anyone gives the GOP anything. I don't know how they're raising money at all. I really don't know. Why would you give money to the Republican Party unless you want something in return? And if you don't want anything in return but borders, language, and culture, why would you give money to either party? And we're talking about the three T's. Tibet, torches, and the other T I forgot already. I can't remember. I had three T's going before. Texas, Child Protective Services. Richard Gere, anti-China protest. He's pathetic. You know, I'm nothing against the guy, but I heard the stories with the furry creature. I think they're ridiculous to bring that up over and over again. I know I do it once in a while just to chide the man and get your attention. I understand when I say a thing like he left his gerbil home to grab the torch. I understand it's a low blow. But in his case, I think there's no such thing as a blow too low enough, in the sense that what is he doing here with the Tibet thing? They're grandstanding. If they were really serious about protesting the Tibet situation, they should put their body on the line in like a Tiananmen Square. Go to China, you know, where there are consequences. Don't bother us here with these fake protests. And then tires. That was the third T. I have a couple of bum tires on my new car. Two already now in a year. The sidewalls went out. They say it's my fault when it isn't my fault. You know, bum tires. They're making them with weak sidewalls. It's like tires that get heart attacks at an early age and die. You know what I'm saying? Remember when my father, it brings up the heart attacks. I don't want to think about it. Not at all. I don't want to think about it. There's a lot of problems in the world. Salmon, there's another one. There's another T. There's a T in there somewhere. Cross the T and dot the I's. But the thing on salmon, it's not simply related to the factors they're telling you. You've got other factors such as underground volcanic activity, which is raising the sea temperature. And the salmon like cold water, so that's another reason. These are cyclic things, you understand. They turn everything into a global warming story. But I'm sure there'll be an abundant recovery of the salmon population in a couple of years. There's another element. Kick the foreign factory ships out of our waters. Stop them coming in with vacuum cleaners under the water. They're killing our water supply, our fishing stocks. Remember, China's got a population that's so enormous compared to ours. They're sucking up all of the world's resources, including lumber, oil, minerals, fish, beef, you name it, and wheat. They're sucking out every resource on the planet. So we have to crack down on this. We got to stop this. Sacramento, Leo, you're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Savage. How are you? Hello?
Leo, make your point, please. Leo, make your point.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Okay, well, it's not my problem that you're deaf. I didn't create your hearing problem. San Diego, Bob, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Dr. Savage. Is everything going
well? What are you telling me? He can't hear me. What did he call me for then? What is this supposed to be like? A Helen Keller job here?
Do you want to hear some more about your tires?
Yes, I do. That's all I care about. Tell me about my tires.
A lot of the information that you've been getting so far is a lot of baloney. Your first question was, what is a road hazard? There's only two things that can happen to a tire to make it fail. One is a road hazard, and the other is a defect in the manufacturer. Now, I could talk for an hour on the defects in manufacture, but you wouldn't know what the hell I'm talking about.
No, I would not. I know nothing about tire manufacturing, but I know one thing, Bob. I've owned cars all my life. I've owned some new cars. I've never had two tires go out on a new car within a year with sidewall problems.
Well, that's just a coincidence, because I can tell you this, that the most expensive tire made to the cheapest putt-boy tire will all have defects, and they will also get damaged when you run into a curb. Now, of course, not being able to see the tires, I couldn't tell you about it. The person that sold you or took care of the tires just made a mistake in not showing you how you damage the tires to cause a road hazard.
Well, no, I'll split the difference on this discussion. The first tire, I did back into a curb, and I may have cut it, so that's why I said, okay, you win. But now two in a row, and this is on the other side of the car, no less. It's almost impossible for me to have hit the tire.
Well, the other one was what's called a ply separation. Now, there's two types of ply separation in the defect.
All right, now it's too technical, Bob. But you're saying basically it's not a defective manufacturing.
Well, there, as I say, there's two types.
All right, I'm going to get some salmon. Actually, I had salmon for lunch today, smoked salmon on a bagel with capers. I have a certain way of making. Oh, do I make a good one? God, you got it. The bagel's hard. I don't have the patience to toast a bagel anymore. Something's happening to me. What's with toasters now? Everything takes too long. Is it me? I don't have the patience to wait for a bagel to toast. Till it toasts, you don't want to eat it anymore. But I get a smoked salmon out here that's actually quite good. It doesn't have that horrible smoky flavor. I like smoked salmon. I know it's toxic and carcinogenic. Although the ones I get allegedly don't have nitrites in them. I don't know. I'm afraid to look at the I don't get it in the package. The guy probably sprinkles the nitrites on it anyway. You know, what am I going to do? But I put capers on it, tomato, little onion, and it's actually quite good. What do you want to talk about on the Savage Nation? Salmon, Sacramento. John, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Michael. I fish the Delta regularly, and you're right on with the salmon. We went from 800,000 at Redding on the fish counter to 80,000 last year. Last year was.
And what do you, as a fisherman, think is causing this destruction of the salmon population?
Well, I'm a doctor, so I got to have more than one diagnosis for this. There's about three things. One, you touched on factory ships. People should read The Perfect Storm, the book. It describes the 7-mile-long nets that scrape from top to bottom, as you say. 14-mile-long hook lines. They catch everything in the food chain. These salmon swim the ocean before they come back to the Sacramento. Then they go up and they try to breed in these filthy, dirty water that's got toxic stuff in it, pesticides from spraying. Mm. 2 years ago, we dredged the McCollumy River, 2 miles of the McCollumy, 3,500 tires, probably where yours are going to wind up, and about 500 boat batteries. So,
oh, my God. So the fish are dying not only in the ocean from a loss of habitat and food, but they're also dying in the rivers because of pollution.
The a 15-pound salmon until it breaks water. The water's so dirty at Isleton, Rio Vista, where we fish.
Isn't that sad, John? You know, look, I am an environmentalist through my core. People say, is that incompatible with being a conservative? I said, no, it's what defines a conservative. People don't understand that conservatives are by definition environmentalists. Maybe the word has a dirty name to it, but I've been a conservationist all my life. Want to call it conservationism? I don't care what it's called. Who in the heck wants to live in a world where you let people throw batteries, commercial batteries, into a river? Well, I mean, what kind of world is this? That's, of course, illegal toxic dumping, isn't it, Doctor?
Absolutely. You know, just to show you how things used to grow, the striped bass on the entire West Coast came after the Civil War on the new railroad in 16 wine barrels. They were put
You're kidding. That's where the striped bass came? They brought, them out in tanks in the wine barrels?
Brought out in about 1872 from Rhode Island in wine barrels, big, huge wine barrels on the Transcontinental Railroad. They were dumped in at Martinez before they invented the refineries there. They spread from Oregon to Baja California, and in 20 years, they were a game fish. Finally, so numerous that President Hoover actually had to stop the commercial fishing of them. So,
why? Because there were so many or so few?
No, the commercial guys got into them and they started depleting them.
Okay, so you're alleging, or you're suspecting, as I'm right, that these damn factory ships are sucking the salmon out of the water.
But not just the salmon, but everything in between. The food chain disappeared.
Yes. Okay, so John, before we go on this issue, the factory ships, they're not just American factory ships now. We're talking about foreign as well, correct?
They're mainly Japanese, Chinese, and Russian. They're so huge. They catch everything, and they can it. They're in the can before they get back to Nagoya. It's incredible.
But, John, let me ask you this. Aren't they supposed to be 7 miles offshore?
They are, but the Coast Guard is stretched so thin, they can't touch them.
Oh, so these foreigners are bringing in factory ships closer to the coast and robbing our fish?
Particularly on the Oregon-Alaska side.
Oh, isn't that sad that we don't have the Coast Guard to protect us anymore? They're busy protecting oil refineries and bridges and such. From our wonderful enemy within, the Islamists. Thanks for the call, Doctor. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation still going strong after all these years? God knows how. It's in God's hands. It can't be me. I don't know where it comes from. I got a double ever-ready battery supply somewhere in me. I told you I lead two lives, one for me and one for my deceased brother who never had a chance. So that's what it is. That's what impels me forward. Who knows? He never had a chance, the poor guy. And so the days I get down, I got to stand up for him. You know, I'm thinking about the coming economic, let's say, splashdown. I don't want to put it into more dramatic terms than that. See, next week is going to be a huge deal. I'm reading a story just now. Treasury prices rise as stocks fall. The Dow Jones dumped 250 points today after GE posted a surprise decline in profit. That was a big story and lowered its forecast for the year. And GE is a blue chip. So anyway, the stocks go down and T-bills go up a very small amount. But the inside of the story is the important part, because next week JP Morgan, Merrill Lynch and Citigroup released their first quarter earnings next Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. If you get worse than expected data from these banks or indications that the credit markets remain dried up, it's liable to draw investors out of stocks and into government securities again next week, which will further depress T-bills, by the way. So this is an amazing story. But if you think about the high food and energy prices that we're facing, I just filled my gas tank. I paid $75 to fill the gas tank. I got to tell you something. I feel like I lost in cards. It's getting insane. Now, I don't happen to be poor. That's not the point. I'm not just sitting here and with fake crocodile tears. But what does the average guy do? What does a truck driver do? Well, okay, I happen to know the trucks have to put surtaxes on, which they're doing, fuel taxes on shipments, and they should. Otherwise, the whole system will grind to a halt. But, you know, there's going to be positives to a downturn in the economy. Less construction noise, for example. Your neighbor won't be redoing their house every 3 months like I have here with a nut next door. A year and a half, they drove me out, now again. Maniacs! Maybe they'll put a stop to it.
Savage. Ba 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 ba.
It is the Savage Nation. Here's a nice story for you. Here's one to really get the beta blockers, reach in the glove box, particularly those of you who are Catholic. Even lapsed Catholics are not going to like this story. I don't like it, and I'm not Catholic. Here it is, just getting it up. Catholic schools close at alarming rate, U.S. to address issue. You hear? For 46 years, crime, recessions, and hurricanes proved no threat to the daily ritual of St. Monica School, where the entire blue and white uniformed student body gathered outside each morning to join in. Come June, though, the tradition will fade away, and Amen will close St. Monica's morning recitations for the last time. The school, a home away from home for mostly minority students, will close. As Pope Benedict XVI next week makes his first pilgrimage to the U.S. as pontiff, Catholic schools across the country, long a force in educating the underprivileged regardless of their faith, face the same fate as St. Monica. About 1,267 Catholic schools have closed since 2000, and enrollment nationwide has dropped by 382,000 students. The problem is most apparent in inner cities and schools, blah, blah, blah. So they say we lose the kids, they can't afford it. So there's the story. I don't know what to make of this story. What do you mean we lose it because the kids can't afford it? I thought that more people were going to religious schools to get away from the propaganda in the public schools. I don't really, I heard that a lot of people, I know Jewish people who send kids, their kids to Catholic schools and then dismiss them during the religious lessons because they basically got a better education. And by the way, conversely, I know of Christian families who send their children in neighborhoods where the public schools are questionable to Jewish schools. And they dismiss them during the religious part of the education because they get a better education in the religious school than they do in the other school. So I don't quite get this story. I don't know what they're probably appealing for government money. I don't know about whether it's faith-based issue or a monetary issue or whatever or both. So now we can add another story to the mix. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255 on the Savage Nation. I'm just rolling along here. If you go to michaelsavage.com, let's see what we have for you on my own website. Because I tend to pick stories you're not going to get on the other websites. Oil for war, you read already. Why the Pentagon gave contract to France, not Boeing, asked John McCann, who won't come on the show and answer that question. White trash billionaires caught smuggling crack, question mark. Were they caught smuggling crack? And are they white trash? We don't know. We'll have to put a question mark on it. Muslim sex offenders are using faith to opt out of treatment. That's a good racket. Why not? Why not say that it's in your religion if you can get your neighbor's daughter in bed? Why not? Didn't work for the religious sect, the Mormon sect down in Texas, but it could work for the Muslims and in England. They're so afraid of them there. Muslim sex offenders are asking to be let off a prison treatment program on religious grounds. Rapists, pedophiles, and other dangerous attackers are expected to discuss their crimes with other inmates as a condition of release. Oh, they're going to discuss it. But Muslim prisoners complain that criminals should not have to talk about their offenses, a legitimate Islamic position, according to Ashtam Malachma Ali, the prison service's Muslim advisor. Oh, that's a nice racket. Everyone else has to have group therapy, but not them, because A, they're not part of the group, and B, they don't need therapy. C, it's basically, I won't finish that. I'm not in a stand-up theater here. The convict said, I've always insisted that it was against Islamic teachings to discuss your offense to anyone. Yeah, everything's Islamic teaching. We can't do that. It's against our teaching. We'll sue you. All right. What else is against your teaching? Well, it's against our religious teaching to sit here in a cell. All right, we'll release you now. What else? It's against our religious teaching to eat your garbage white man food. All right, give you special food. What else? It's against our religious teaching to have anyone but our people in our own religion tell us anything. All right, what are you people, insane, putting up with this crap? You're letting them connive you with this garbage? Good thing I'm not in charge of anything. But, you know, look, England's been gone a long time. The fact of the matter is there is no England anymore. A prison service spokesman said officials were seeking to ensure the treatment program was sensitive to the diversity of religions within the prison context. I'd like to give them a little sensitivity to the prison itself, not to the diversity of their religion. I'd give them a little walk down the hall of sensitivity to the young girls they molested or the boys that they did. Unbelievable to me. Can you believe this garbage that they're getting away with in England? What a load of rubbish. Common sense doesn't seem to apply at all. Yeah, my religion. Huh. How do you like this? Look what's taken over our prisons now. It is against the rules of Islam for Muslims to discuss their crimes. Can you show me that chapter and verse, please? What else is against your religion? To comply with the law of the land? Sure. It's not Sharia law. Ipso facto, I can do what I want. Why don't you let him get away with that one? Say it's against the law for a Muslim to listen to the law of anybody except Muslims. Therefore, I can rape your wife. Is that what you're going to hear next? Go ahead, put up with it. They'll give me the mumbo jumbo and you say, oh, well, I got to be sensitive to the religion. There was a day that the cop would take him and give him a shellacking in the back of the car and tell him to shut his mouth. That's what we need again in this country, is good old-fashioned justice in the back of a police car. Throw him down a flight of stairs on the way into the jail and throw the lawyer with him. At least some people think that way. I don't personally. I personally don't harbor such feelings. Some do. I hear they write me. That's what they say, Mike. Say that. I wouldn't say it because if I did, you'd think that I'm a different kind of guy than I actually am. I don't believe in that kind of thing. I believe in sensitivity to all peoples and cultures and religions and lifestyles. Oh, yeah, that's what I believe in. That's so good for America. It's so refreshing to bring in so many wonderful people from around the world and let them bring all of their wonderful cultural attributes to this country. Because we were too white. The country was just too white and too uptight. It was white and uptight. And what we need with this diversity and multiculturalism is an opening up to the world and the feelings of the world and the religions of the world. You morons, you. Everything is a racket. Everything is a trick. Everything is a trick. Luckily, you have me. Luckily, you have me to sound off for you. Otherwise, it would be hopeless entirely. Would you listen to John McCann there, the shoe salesman? Maybe he put his foot in the machine too many times also. I don't know. Maybe it went right to his brain. I don't know. I'm starting to get so leery of the whole thing, but they say, well, who are you going to vote for? How about no, none of the above? Does none of the above work for you? Oh, you can't do that, Mike. You can't do that, Mike. You're liable to let Hillary Obama win. Oh, yeah, I heard that with Bush when I didn't want to vote for him two times, but I did because it might have been Gore or it might have been Kerry. I'm not so sure that Kerry would have been worse than Bush, incidentally. What is it? Tell me the difference between Kerry and Bush 7 years later. You want to do a retro on that one? Tell me the difference between what would have been had Kerry been president and what is under Bush. Tell me, what liberal program would not have been passed? Maybe we wouldn't be at war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And would that be such a bad thing? I'm not so sure it would have been such a bad thing, by the way. Could he have messed up the economy any more than Bush has? Could he? Could he have exported more factories and more jobs than Bush has? Could he have busted the borders any more than Bush has? Tell me. Tell me what Kerry and his left-wing companions would have done that Bush has not yet done. Tell me. Oh, he would have expanded government more than Bush has? Tell me, what else? There's maybe one or two things I can think of now that I'm exposing myself to my own argument and discussion. Probably would have raised taxes by now. That would have been a bad thing. Would that have affected the economy more so than what we're having now? Probably not. Not letting guys from Goldman Sachs run the treasury into the ground? Tell me, what's worse, raising taxes or busting the currency altogether? You want to have that discussion? Have it amongst yourselves. I don't know that I want to do the Catholic schools thing. Take those callers. I don't want to do that because it's going to get into, you know, okay, I'm glad I brought it up. I don't know what it's all about, that whole story there, the religious schools. Luckily, I don't have school-aged children anymore. Oh, I wouldn't know what to do. I wouldn't know what to do. You got colleges now where the perverts have so taken over that they can take a kid in a college to a house of ill repute, a prostitution den in Nevada, and call it diversity. That's why when I wrote Diversity is Perversity, you know how right I was. You know it. I don't care what your walk of life is. I don't care what the color of your skin is. I don't care what your orientation is. You know that the whole thing about diversity is pushed by the perverts. And the only reason it's like a coattail thing. They know if they can make you accept diverse cultures, they can then push the homosexual agenda down your throat and pervert your child. Do you understand that it's all a plan? It's all one gigantic scheme? That by pushing diversity, they come in on the coattails, and the next thing you know is they're taking your child to a brothel in Nevada and calling it multiculturalism 101. But There's nothing you can do about it. Someone picked up on the Bush Kerry difference. Is there? I'm serious. That's a great discussion. Somebody should steal that and work it up on a blog and make believe you thought of it on your own, which you can't do. This is an idea factory here in the Savage Nation. You know, like sparks fly on a wheel at sharpening a knife? There are more ideas flying off the wheel of my mind on this show than you can find virtually anywhere in the media today. That's a good thing. That's when I'm in a good mood. I'm feeling good today. I don't know what happened. Something's wrong. I'm checking. I don't understand it. That's an old Buddy Hackett joke, which I love. I still love that joke. I used to love Buddy Hackett. I saw him once when I was a little kid at the Browns Hotel in like Sheldrick, New York. I was a little kid. Buddy Hackett was this pudgy comedian like a Lou Costello type. But wow, he had lungs on him and he had a great sense of humor. And he had real, you know, really great delivery. So he told this great story, which I laughed. I'm laughing at it decades later. He said he went into the Army in Fort Dix, New Jersey, and they put him on the Army regimen, you know, exercise and a lean, horrible diet. And he said weeks later, he said he didn't know what was wrong with him. He said he didn't have a headache. He didn't have dyspepsia. His back didn't hurt him. He said for the first time in his life, he didn't have these things. He said he thought there was something wrong with him. So he went to the Army doctor. He said, "Doctor, I don't know what's wrong." He said, "I don't have a headache. I don't have a stomach ache. My back doesn't hurt." It's very funny. It's very comedic. Well, I'm in many ways, I feel that way today. I don't know what's wrong. Everything's working. Something must be wrong here. It must have been the linguine tutamari last night today. It must have been the clams and the mussels and the calamari, which I swore off back and forth, on and off. I'm not going to eat them. I do eat them. No, I know what it is. Wait a minute. Hold it. It has nothing to do with that. Because I haven't been feeling well, I went back to my nutrition education and the books I wrote and the doctors I used to read. And I've been reading more about cyanocobalamin, B12 in particular. And I started to take extra B12. I took extra beta carotene. And I've been taking extra coenzyme Q. That's what it is. There's a reason for this feel-good stuff. You know what I'm saying? That's what it is. I went back to what I used to teach. So, you know, you can forget your own teachings, doctor. Do you realize that when you forget your own teachings, you get in trouble when you start listening to other people? I went back to my own stuff. I said, wait a minute. And you know what started this? Can I tell you something personally? Well, I'm going to do it anyway. I mean, what am I going to do? It's like radio, can I? Of course I am. I'll try to do it in a tasteful manner. Although I speak like a guy from the street, I can sometimes pretend I'm working for corporate America. So I'll make believe now I'm in a boardroom and I want to be polite about it. I normally take a multi-B vitamin. I won't mention the brand, but it's excellent. I'm taking the same one for 30 years. If I shift off it, I don't feel as good. And I've tried it off and on for days, you know, I can tell right away. And the one marker for me is the color of my urine. Normally, there's nothing ugly about this. It's not meant to be comedic in the political arena. It's meant to be actually medical in the political arena is what it comes down to. Normally, when you're healthy, urine is colorless. Sometimes you get a slight yellow in it if you've had sufficient B vitamins from your food if you don't take nutrients. But if you take mega doses of nutrients as I do, particularly B vitamins in the 50 milligram and up range, except for the microgram levels that are required with B12, normally I'll get a nice yellow color, and that's consistent. But if I miss the vitamins, it's not yellow. Now, here's something interesting. I've been taking the same vitamins that I've been taking for 30 years, but because I'm recovering from pneumonia, I started to notice that even though I'm taking them, the color of the substance I am mentioning is no longer yellow. It is neutral. It's almost neutral, as though I didn't take the vitamin. So I said, wait a minute, that means my body is now utilizing all of that B vitamin that colors the urine, while in the past there was excess and it was spilled out, you know, in the urine. So I said, wait a minute, what is the B vitamin that accounts for the color of the urine? I know it's not I know it's not B6. I know it's not B12. I think it's either B1 or B2. It's either riboflavin or the other one, thiamine, one or the other. And so I started to read intensely on thiamine and riboflavin, vitamins that we've long forgotten, completely forgotten, but you don't realize how important they are. When you go back to the Japanese of World War II, when they had endemically had beriberi because they were eating white rice, when their ancestors ate brown rice, and they're getting all the B vitamins from the hull of the rice in brown rice, which is what you should eat, and they threw away the hull of the rice, they wound up with beriberi and other diseases because they were missing these nutrients, okay? Well, this is even more interesting as I delved into it this week. Do you know that when you eat raw fish, like as you do in eating sushi or sashimi. Raw fish contains an enzyme called thiaminase. Thiaminase is an enzyme that destroys thiamine. So if you're eating white rice and you're eating raw fish, you're getting a double dose of a destructive forces against the B vitamin known as thiamine. And that's why they got the disease. It's interesting, isn't it? Then I read on, and you know about converted rice, don't you? You know, Uncle Ben's converted rice, you thought it was junk. What they actually did was is they took brown rice and they treated it and drove the B vitamins into the white rice itself so that when you ate the converted rice, you were actually getting some of the B vitamins that you were not getting prior to that manufacturing process. But today, of course, if you eat white rice, they're enriching it as they are enriching white bread. The only thing you're probably not getting is some of the other nutrients in the shell or the coat, as well as the fiber from the shell itself. So there it is. You can see everything with your own eyes if you're careful and you look. I'll be right back.
Savage. There's a yellow rose in Texas that I am gonna see. Nobody else could miss her, not half as much as me.
Oh. The guys are playing with my head, the yellow rose of Texas. I'm talking about the color of urine, and they have to play with my head like that. Well, let me just finish this up. I was telling you, I did just so normally when I take these vitamins, I get a yellow, bright yellow urine color due to the fact that the vitamin B2 riboflavin produces yellow fluorescent substances in it, and the excess is excreted, okay? Now I notice that while I'm recovering from this particular little thing, the color of that liquid is neutral. It's not yellow. So that means I'm not using any excess. My body is using it. So I started to think I need additional B vitamins to recover. Now, I researched the vitamin B2 again, which is riboflavin, and no one ever talks about it. It's not like a sexy vitamin. You don't hear anything, oh, riboflavin. You hear about everything else. It's like a sad old cousin, riboflavin. But don't ever forget that vitamin B2, riboflavin, is required in your body to convert carbohydrates into energy in the cells, number one. It also processes proteins and fats. It converts vitamin B6 and folic acid to their active forms. And most importantly, with regard to energy, it assists with the regeneration of glutathione, an antioxidant. So, you know, it's a very important B vitamin that most of us have forgotten about. And that you know, you start with one thread in nutrition, and it'll take you into the encyclopedia of your own mind and of my mind. I've written many books in the field of nutrition and vitamins, and my best for children is Healing Children Naturally, which I never talk about, but I should. The way children are mistreated in our society by ignoramuses in the medical field who put them on drugs makes me sick. Look, I'm no child. Drugs can save lives. But when I saw a show the other day where child psychiatrists are taking children as young as 2 and 3 years old and putting them on psychoactive compounds, I think these doctors should be shot. They should be taken out, and they should be hung for what they're doing to children. I've never seen anything like it. They show a little boy 5 or 6 years old who has a little trouble adjusting, and they talk to this doctor, and he says, well, how are you feeling now? Are you EDA? Are your ideas disturbing you? And the kid says, well, yes, but when I take this drug and that drug and that drug, he says, well, why don't you try in the morning, he tells the mother, a little bit of the anti-anxiety drug to go with it. Now, I added drug number 6. This is to a 6-year-old kid. The doctors should be hung for what they're doing to our children. That's my opinion. And I don't care whether you like it or not. They're criminals, and they're just peddling drugs, and they're worse than a crack dealer. At least a crack dealer is what he is. He doesn't make believe he's a healer. These guys make believe they're healers and they're harming your children, in my opinion. And that's why I say, please, go to michaelsavage.com, buy yourself a copy of Healing Children Naturally, and you'll thank yourself for doing it. And I have not talked about this book for 6 to 9 months, and I haven't plugged it once. I could do it every day, and I don't do it. Believe me, I'm not doing it because I need the money, and I'm not doing it because I want to make a name for myself. I'm doing it because I want you people to understand your children are being used like lab rats by the medical pharmaceutical establishment. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. And I've been on this since 1980 when I started talking about Ritalin and the effects of these anti-anxiety drugs. There are many things you can do, diet, herbs, nutrients, that you're not doing. You're putting children on diets to make them crazy to start with. Or they're being starved to death because of nutritional deficiencies. And then the crackpot, the drug dealer called a pediatrician, poisons them with drugs.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation trying to fight propaganda on a daily basis. We've been talking about... Turn it off already. They don't want to hear that. It's too lightweight. They don't want to hear about already salmon and riboflavin. What they want to hear about is who the real Obama is. The Barack Hussein Obama that they're hiding from you is slowly but surely emerging. And, you know, I've complained about this endless campaign that's gone on forever. It shows that we're living in a nation of propaganda and nothing but propaganda, around-the-clock propaganda. When you see a guy like McCain who won't come on the show to answer certain hard questions, instead he goes on a show with women who are an embarrassment, to be honest with you, you understand why the people have antipathy towards McCain, particularly people who consider themselves to be conservative. But now look at the other side. Obama's in San Francisco Sunday at the home of the Gettys, the inheritance cases on Pacific Heights. People who've never worked a day in their life, who inherited an oil fortune and spend it with various soirees and top of the liberal heap, you know, dinner parties in their mansion. They're entitled to it. It's a free country. So they have a fundraiser for Obama in a billionaire's house, an inheritance case, no less. This, of course, you don't understand. Why would a far leftist like Obama be comfortable with billionaires? Don't you understand yet that Leninism or Marxism or communism, I mean varieties thereof, are societies that are built upon no democracy? The voice of the people is nil. The elites run the country. That's what we've been trying to warn you about Obama and even Hillary herself. Not that McCain is too far removed, by the way, from this concept of liberalism, where the elites rule and the people be damned. But the most extreme of them is Obama. So Obama's at a San Francisco fundraiser at the Gettys house. They don't tell you that, by the way, on the website that's posting this story. I know where he was, the Politico thing. They only know so much, but I know the rest. I give you the rest of the story. So Obama's at the Gettys mansion Sunday to this crowd of very wealthy left-wingers. And here's what he says. He's talking about Pennsylvania, where he's, you know, facing a primary very, very shortly. And, of course, they don't like him in the small towns of Pennsylvania. So he tries to justify why the people of Pennsylvania don't like him. Now, we're not talking about the big cities. We're talking about small-town America. And here's what he says. He says, and it's not surprising, then, that they get bitter. They cling to guns or religion or antipathy toward people who aren't like them or anti-immigrant sentiment or anti-trade sentiment as a way to explain their frustrations. Now, this shows you how out of touch with reality this character Obama is. You believe that the job losses in these towns across America are not real, Obama? You're no different than the elitists that you claim not to be. They get bitter? Why do you refer to them as they? They cling to guns? You never heard of the Second Amendment in Hawaii when you're sitting at the feet of that communist rat who inculcated that garbage in your head? Or they cling to religion and you claim to be a Christian and we know you're not? Or they have antipathy toward people who aren't like them? Who do you mean by that, Obama? Islamists, they're supposed to love them? Or anti-immigrant sentiment when their borders are being busted, Obama? And they come here and suck out the schools and the hospitals and they're not supposed to get mad, Obama? Or they cling to religion, guns, and xenophobia? Let me tell you something, Obama. They cling to borders, language, and culture because they're Americans and you're not. You're a liar. You're an elitist and you're an internationalist and the people know it. And they're not going to elect you, Obama. Let me tell you something. I have been complaining about this endless campaign forever. But you know something? I'm starting to see the benefits of an endless campaign because we're starting to actually see the veneer, the stucco cracking and falling off the slick face of Obama. And underneath it is not a very pretty picture. What we see is not a very slick man, a cool, fast-talking man. What we see is a man who hates the mainstream and hates the main street. What he has here is a hatred and an antipathy towards America itself. He doesn't like religion, guns, and the quote-unquote nativism of the American people. What does he like then? Well, ask him what he likes. It certainly isn't very good for his campaign to have been exposed like this. The job loss is very real, Obama. It's something you and your wife wouldn't know anything about because you've skated pretty good based upon your very, very good luck and the people behind you like the zillionaire Soros, who for his own reasons wants a Leninist like you, an Afro-Leninist like you to take over the country. But the people themselves haven't been heard from yet. And let me tell you something, you're not getting elected. It will either be Hillary or McCain, in my opinion. In a few minutes, we're going to have a wonderful interview that I did earlier on the Savage Nation right here on the program. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. If you'd like to read about this Obama stuff or the other things that you're probably not going to see tomorrow in your local paper, you can go to michaelsavage.com where you'll read Schwarzenegger will fight efforts to ban gay marriage. Christian fined for refusing lesbian wedding picture. Did you hear this? Serb prisoners stripped of their organs in Kosovo war. Did you know that? Oh, you thought it was the Albanian, ethnic Albanians who suffered? Oh, Mike told you what was really going on. This just came out in the London Telegraph, but Serb prisoners had their internal organs removed and sold by ethnic Albanians during the Kosovo war, according to allegations in a new book. You don't want to hear it. Oh, no, you don't want to hear it because your brain has been washed by perverts like the type that's arrested here in San Francisco for child molestation. A big fat monster of a slob left winger, Bernie Ward, in my opinion, who is no longer on the radio. I distinctly remember during the Kosovo war, when the Serbs were accused of war crimes, I said, you people are taking it wholesale from the Clintons. The Clintons committed war crimes against the Serbs in order to drive Lewinsky off the map, number one. Remember Wag the Dog, Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro, the shame on them for the rest of their lives, how they participated in that scam. And number two, the oily tracks run through Kosovo, which is an article I wrote during that horrendous war. So eventually the truth will win out. It will take a long time for you to come to understand that the Clintons actually committed war crimes against the Serbian people. Millions of people in the world know this. You go to Greece and you find people who understand what went on against Serbia. They know war crimes were committed. But the fact is that this new story, Serb prisoners stripped of their organs in Kosovo war by ethnic Albanians. You didn't hear that one, did you, from the Clintons when she talked about ducking sniper fire? Now, Obama slams Pennsylvania small town thinking is also up on michaelsavage.com from Politico, where he says that they cling to guns or religion or antipathy to people who are not like them. This Obama character is starting to be seen for who he is, believe me. And what we see, we don't like. Oh, maybe they like him in the Getty home. I don't doubt that they love him in the Getty home. People have never worked a day in their life. They inherited their money. They'd love a guy like Obama. It makes them feel good to see a man like him in their mansion. They get a triple out of that one. They get a minority. They get a left winger. They get to feel good for doing a fundraiser in their mansion for him. They're helping an oppressed minority, don't you know? It's so patently nauseating that I need say no more other than Obama, who slammed the Pennsylvanians for small town thinking, fundamentally is just slamming himself for being out of touch with the mainstream of America. Coming up next, what's going on in our ports right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The Dubai ports deal was shot down by the Savage Nation, but America's ports are still in danger. The National Geographic Channel is running a series on security at U.S. ports, which features Ronald J. Boyd, Chief of Los Angeles Port Police. He's here to talk with us now. Chief Boyd, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on.
Chief Boyd, tell us about your law enforcement background.
Well, I've got nearly 28 years in law enforcement, the majority of my career here in the city of Los Angeles. My command prior to working here at the port, or my appointment at the port, was at Los Angeles Airport. I was a captain, and I worked in a variety of assignments over at LAX. And during the time I was there, some of the notable things was the Ahmed Rassam attempt bombing attack at LAX, and certainly everyone knows the things that occurred at LAX around September 11th. And I came to the port at about November of 2004. I've been here, got appointed, sworn in by Mayor Jim Hahn in 2005.
Tell us about the show on port security on National Geographic.
I think the National Geographic did a great job in coming out. They embedded with us for quite a while, specifically with the port police, but the show really shows the operations side and the administrative side of what it takes to operate the nation's largest container port. And when you look at the Port of L.A., it's a lot of people and a lot of moving parts, and I think they've given us a great depiction of what that is. Got an eight-week series that shows not only the supply chain by following cargo from the manufacturer all the way to the store shelves in Middle America, but the people and the components and the issues that are all involved in the middle.
Well, how busy is the L.A. port?
Well, here's an interesting example of how large and what significance the port is to our nation. Everything you touch from the time you get up to the time you go to bed, about 95% of it, let's say, is a shipped good. So that's nearly everything. And 45% of that, according to CBP figures, or nearly half of nearly everything, comes through the Port of L.A. and Long Beach. And what does that translate to? That's about 14 million containers between the two ports at Los Angeles, Long Beach. We refer to it as the San Pedro Bay. And our executive director from our port has coined the phrase that if you bought it, we brought it. But certainly that's a significant impact upon our commerce, both to the region here in Southern California, but also nationally, because certainly the things that are coming through the Port of L.A. from some of our trade partners in China and other areas are ending up on the store shelves in Middle America. And so it's got a vast impact. The port complex, 43 miles of waterfront, 7,500 acres of land, 50-some-odd terminals between the two port complexes between L.A. and Long Beach. So it's pretty huge. Even in, you know, Southern California, especially in the Hollywood area, we're focused on the entertainment industry, and so it's almost little noticed that the economic engine for the country is right in the backyard of the city of L.A.
We've heard horror stories in the media about lack of security of the ports. How secure are our ports?
Well, Michael, you asked a great question. The port security issue is something that is an evolving issue. I mentioned that I had some experience in aviation security prior to being appointed as police chief. And one of the things that was a little disheartening coming into the port environment was to see how little attention had been paid towards security in the port infrastructure prior to September 11th. So we've really had to get into gear and get our act together as far as strengthening the port security model. I'm pleased to report that it's a lot better than it was September 12th, but I'm also the first one to tell you that we have a long way to go. There's a lot of things that need to be improved as far as the security infrastructure, the addition of technology, the improvement of communication, staffing at a number of the ports, and mine included, to have public safety personnel that are ready, prepared, and have the capabilities to respond to an emergency. Those are all things that we're looking at today. We have a number of operations that the officers are performing, such as our Sea Marshals program, something that wasn't done prior to September 11th. That's an improvement. We're putting together technology so we can improve our monitoring and censoring, not just above ground, but below the surface of the water. And there's a number of new developments that are coming forward, even beyond what you'll see in the show, where we're able to detect swimmers, detect maybe destructive devices that might be introduced into the harbor waters, and then simple things like the types of patrol boats we use. The patrol fleet has improved vastly over the past 5 years.
How close to where you want to be are we today?
Speaking specifically for our port, is we're about 50% of the way of where we want to be today, and that may evolve tomorrow, naturally. But as far as staffing, we're making great strides. Technology, we're adding a number of technology improvements. Our concept of operations continues to improve on a daily basis, and we're building the infrastructure for growth so that we can continue to grow. In the National Geographic episodes, you'll notice a number of functions that the law enforcement and first responder communities perform using technology. Those are things that just didn't occur 3-5 years ago.
Are you receiving the support you need in making the changes to port security? Are there any challenges to securing the port that you're running into?
The answer to both of those questions is yes. Are we receiving the support? Yes, we are. Have there been challenges? There have been some huge challenges, and there continue to be. And our challenges, again, not speaking just for on our own behalf, are for all of the seaports in North America. I know Chief Bob Hecker down in the Port of New Orleans has had a number of challenges because it's not only the man-caused threat, it's some of the natural disasters and things that can affect the port community. And then seeking funding to get the necessary technologies, necessary equipment to improve our responses both at a state and federal level, that's been a huge challenge.
Securing the ports is key to our security. How can we help, we the people?
Well, raising your awareness about the port and how it operates, and one fine way to do that is by watching this special on National Geographic, and then if you have the time to jot a note or make a phone call to a local or federal elected official and let them know that you're interested in making sure that the port complexes are secure and that they're getting the amount of funding and support that they need, that would go a long way for us.
Well, what do you see happening in the near future?
I see a lot of great improvements being made. The port community is improving. And I mentioned the term first responder, and I've also taken it a step further and been speaking lately about the first affected, which is all of the folks who are involved as stakeholders in the trade aspect. And that means the dock workers, the crew members on the vessels, the truck drivers, the people in the communities that live around the ports. The better able the first affected folks are in collaborating on making this a more secure infrastructure, the more well-off we'll all be.
Savage. The liberal media seems happy to speak on behalf of our troops, but rarely do we get to hear their own voices, that is, of the troops. Former Navy SEAL Dick Couch has written a book called Chosen Soldier, The Making of a Special Forces Warrior, about how our elite forces are trained to fight behind enemy lines, and I don't mean in Manhattan, and what life is really like for them. Mr. Couch, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mike. It's great to be on your show today. I appreciate talking with you.
Tell us about your background.
Well, I am pleased to be a graduate of the United States Naval Academy. I served aboard ship before I went into the Navy underwater demolition and SEAL teams. Served there for 5 years, and then after leaving there, I was a paramilitary case officer with the CIA for a period of time. I began my writing career in 1990, and it's continued right on up through the present.
Why did you write this particular book?
The Chosen Soldier is about Army Special Forces, and I'm a Navy guy, and so having gone through Navy SEAL training back when I was on active duty, and I went through the process again with The Warrior Elite, a book I wrote back in 1999 and 2000. I'm very interested in special operations training, and I wanted to see how the Army trained their special warriors, specifically special forces, because they're a very important component of our special operations community and certainly a very important component in our war on terrorism.
How long did you spend with the special forces?
Well, I in 2004, my wife and I, we left our mountain home in Idaho, and we went to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and we lived there for a year. We lived that on Camp McCall, which is a Special Forces training base. They were very nice to let me into their world, and every morning or whenever, I went out and watched them in classes, participated in their training, and sometimes at night, I'd be out there following these guys through the swamps of North Carolina observing them as they trained and prepared for this. Special Forces training can take anywhere from a year to 2 years, depending upon the language specialty and certain disciplines that they're taught, but it takes a long time to make one of these guys. It's an expensive process, and only about one who enters finishes.
What is it that the Special Forces actually do?
Army Special Forces, these are the Green Berets. They can do a whole bunch of things. They have a broad range of skills, military skills, including communications, medicine, weapons, that type of thing. But what their really strong suit is, they are teachers. Their job is to train other soldiers, other armies, our allies, to be more effective soldiers. So they have a great deal of leverage on the battlefield in that they can train others to fight. And so that's their skill set. They're also masters at cross-cultural disciplines. They all have language capabilities. They're very good with other cultures. They're very good working by themselves out someplace with a bunch of indigenous troops. So that's why they're very important soldiers and very, very much needed in our current situation.
What is a typical day like in Afghanistan for these soldiers?
Well, I think a typical day for a Special Forces soldiers is probably going to be, you know, briefing up with his team. What are they going to do today, or what's the next operation, or how are they doing things? And then typically, two of these guys or four of these guys or more will go off, collect their platoon or company of Afghan irregulars or Iraqi Army scouts, and they will either perhaps go through some training. Now, training in these foreign cultures, sometimes they only work 3 or 4 hours a day, or they do these things, but basically they're out there working with them, teaching military skills. It could be they're out on operations, whereas that those Afghan irregulars are doing a sweep or a patrol through an area. These special, maybe there could be 30 or 40 of them and two American soldiers with them to help and advise and guide and be a resource for them as they go about their duties.
Well, it sounds like they have quite a big emphasis on teaching and learning.
Absolutely. Now, these soldiers can fight. They have good small unit tactic skills. Many of them are former Rangers. Most of them are combat veterans, either in the conventional forces or in Army Special Forces. So they've been around a while. The average age of a deployed Special Forces A-team is probably around 30 to 32 years old. So these are very experienced soldiers.
Well, they also gather intelligence as well, don't they?
That certainly falls in there. Don't forget, they're working closely with the indigenous people. They're helping not only the soldiers, but seeing to their families, paying them. They have very good capabilities to provide medical services to the indigenous people, including their families. And when they do these types, they could be living in a village in Afghanistan or in a small area, small village in Iraq, and they will help the extended community. And for that help, these people often will confide in them, tell them things that maybe don't come through normal intelligence or normal reporting channels. So as far as human intelligence, and that's the best kind, the people on the ground, the people who live there, they're very good at gathering this type of intelligence and either acting upon it themselves or passing it along for other units to act upon.
How are soldiers selected for the Special Forces? Can anyone do it?
Well, in selecting them, and that's what Chosen Soldiers is about, how do you select and train these people? They're looking for three things. They're looking for men who are tough, who can live in hard conditions and survive there. They're looking for guys who are smart. Intelligence is a key factor in Special Forces, any forces for that matter, but it's very important that they have the intelligence to master the military skills, foreign languages, and to become aware and function in a cross-cultural environment. And the third thing is they have to play well with others, and that's generic for some people just want to be fighters. They just want to be with their mates and get behind the gun and go out and do their job, and that's well and good. But other people, what the Special Forces is looking for are people who like other people, who get on well with others. Your quintessential Special Forces sergeant will go out and stop a car driving down the road just to meet and talk to a perfect stranger. They engage other people. They're very good at it. That's a part of their job.
All we see in the movies about special forces, about the ways they can kill people and blow stuff up. How come we don't see what they can really do?
Well, that's a good question. I think that, you know, we live in a visual world, and good film cuts are sort of what you want. Sometimes working in a community, helping others, training them in military skills, helping them with their schools, helping them buy books, seeing to their medical problems, sometimes getting Iraqis and Afghanis to fight and help and do the right thing means you have to show them you care, which means you function within their community, and you, their problems become your problems. This is kind of boring stuff in the way we Americans look and picture war, but it's deadly serious business and very effective when it's done properly by these, by basically American fighting men who can go out and live with others and help them to become better fighting men.
Well, the special forces seem like one of the most essential groups of soldiers we have fighting over there.
Absolutely. I mean, if part of the, if the key ingredient of our getting out of Iraq and Afghanistan is that they can pick up the load and do the job, that means they can defeat the insurgent elements, they can control some of the almost criminal elements that live among them. These are things they have to be able to do so that they can have a functioning society and we can leave. Well, the stock and trade of Army Special Forces is to help them become better at the military duties and counterinsurgency disciplines they have to master so we can go home. We don't spend enough attention studying foreign other cultures and learning how to help them function and defeat our common enemies. It's we in the American military are very good at maneuver warfare, and you know, we can take an armored column into about any capital in the world and take it over. But what happens after that? Al-Qaeda and some of those types of people, they're very good at using piggybacking on insurgencies, terrorizing, intimidating people, and theirs is a tyranny of the minority. And we need to work very hard at having a military that can function in a counterinsurgency environment and helping our allies and indigenous people defeat our common enemies. And special that's why Army Special Forces and all our special operations forces are so very important in accomplishing these goals.
Dick Couch, it's been an honor. Thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Mike, it's been my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on.
Savage.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me, home. We'll have some fun when the clock strikes one. We're going to rock around the
It is the Savage Nation. Little Bill Haley in the comments. Prior to multiculturalism, we had rock and roll. Before it became whatever. Now, we have the soundbite of Obama putting down small-town America. You know, it's all over the internet where he says that the little people get bitter. They cling to guns or religion or antipathy toward people who aren't like them or anti-immigrant sentiment or anti-trade sentiment as a way to explain their frustrations. Yeah, well, they lost their jobs, Obama. It's something you, of course, have not experienced owing to the fact that you're a protected personality, as you well know. You and your wife have skated pretty good, and you've not experienced a job loss in your entire life. I don't think you've ever missed a meal. But you see, there are actually real Americans of all ethnic backgrounds who are missing meals and payments and whatnot. And so we have the soundbite of Obama putting down the average American. Now, it's very hard to hear, but we'll start it. Go ahead, play it now. It's not surprising that they get bitter, says the great Barack Hussein Obama. They. Now, what if you said about blacks, they? Black people rightly get mad when they say, what do you mean by they? What do you mean by you people? Now he's talking about they get bitter, so he's not them. See, this guy's a phony through and through. He says, they cling to anti-trade sentiments. So let me see. He's in favor of George Bush's open borders and so-called free trade, when we know there's no such thing as free trade, the way it's being conducted. Who is Obama? Well, I guess Obama is anybody he's speaking to. In this case, he was at a San Francisco fundraiser Sunday. I happen to think it was at the Getty House, the Getty Mansion on Pacific Heights. And so he's telling all of these people who paid, what, I don't know, whatever they paid, $1,400 a seat to listen to this charlatan, that the little people of Pennsylvania who don't like him, who resent him, don't resent him for the following reasons. They cling to guns or religion or antipathy toward people who aren't like them. In other words, I guess they're not French enough for Obama. Or anti-immigrant sentiment. You mean we're supposed to love the immigrants who are destroying our country, Obama? Is that it? You love the immigrants, do you? You love all the immigrants? Well, we love the people. They're nice people. They're hardworking, by and large. Everybody knows that. I'm the son of an immigrant, which, of course, you're not. Well, he actually was the son not of an immigrant, but a visitor to the country from Africa. That's right. He's not the son of an immigrant. He had a father for a little while who went back to Africa. That is true. So he doesn't have the multicultural experience that I do of America. He has a wider multicultural experience in that his mother then left with an Indonesian man, married him next, ran off to Indonesia and put little Barry Obama, his name was Barry at the time, into a madrasas, which is true, not invented, not fake, it's real, went into a madrasas. Now, maybe he's a moderate Muslim as a child, was a moderate Muslim. I don't know. But let's not deny the fact that he went to a madrasas for a few years. That's not necessarily bad. The fact of the matter is, in those days, these religious schools were not as fanatical as they are today in many ways and in many places. But you'd have to look into the particular religious school that he went to know more about what he was inculcated with and whether he believes any of it. I doubt that he would agree to even discuss the topic. But it's irrelevant, truthfully. What's relevant is what he thinks about the average American person in Pennsylvania who doesn't like him. They cling to guns or religion or antipathy toward people who aren't like them, or anti-immigrant sentiment or anti-trade sentiment as a way to explain their frustrations. No, I think it could be because they lost their jobs or they saw their industries deported to a foreign country because the Wall Street gangsters, because the pirates of Wall Street wanted to make an extra buck, Obama. That's probably something you probably would never say at a mansion in Pacific Heights. You know, we know that you eat the hot dogs with the little people. I know you ate kielbasa in Pennsylvania. We know you ate the kielbasa. But behind closed doors, when you're dining on poached salmon and bad Chardonnay, you say something else. So there it is. That's the truth about Barry Obama. I guess the libs love him because of that cute name, you know. Barack. If his name was Barry, do you think if his name was Barry Obama, the libs would love him as much? Here he stereotypes white people. And actually, it's not just whites, but let's say poor whites is what he's talking about, or out of work whites. Here he is using a broad brush to stereotype poor white people who've lost their jobs, just like his preacher, Reverend Wright. See, everyone outside of the big city, everyone outside of the Getty Mansion, I guess, is angry. They're bigots. They cling to their guns. And only the elites don't have to cling to guns because they have private security guards around their house. What do they need guns for? You see? So there it is. That's someone who preaches positive attitudes, but in fact making stupid, childish, sophomoric generalizations. But there it is. And I guess when they're out of a job, they become religious nuts, gun-toting, who hate outsiders. Maybe the rest of you will come to understand who this dangerous freakazoid is. To me, he's another loser, another elitist, just like the rest of them running for the office, to me, as far as I'm concerned. He's way overrated, and I think the people of Pennsylvania will finally come to understand that Barry Obama does not deserve their vote. And that's it. You know, of course, the libs agree with him. I mean, he's got his own xenophobia when you think about it. Obama's got his own xenophobia. Here he insults and degrades and is arrogant towards the average American who's in Pennsylvania or anywhere else who's out of work. But here's a guy who's a xenophobe when it comes to his own country. He's actually taking the viewpoint of a foreigner looking into America, and he's actually xenophobic towards Americans. Huh. So I guess believing in God and owning a gun and securing our border is something that is not American. Very, very nice. Very nice to see. At least he's telling the truth. At least he's telling the truth about the world. And, well, it is true in a certain way that people do turn to religion when times are bad. And, of course, small-town America is not Pacific Heights in San Francisco. No, no, no. Small-town America doesn't need heroin. Small-town America doesn't need crack. By and large, small-town America just needs the Bible. They don't need the fancy designer drugs. They don't go in and out of treatment, by the way, in small-town America to the extent that they do in Pacific Heights. No, by and large, they don't need to go in and out of rehab in small-town America. Maybe they can't afford it. Maybe because they cling to that rubbish book called the Bible and actually believe in God. Could be that's why they don't have to believe in a shrink who puts them on a drug and then sends them into rehab. I don't know the exact reason. So there it is. They cling to their guns and their religion. Yep, First and Second Amendments. Those pesky little amendments that upsets Barry Obama. Be real backwards, the American people. And he's a unifier, huh? He wants change. I warned you. I warned you what change means. What does change mean? It means anything you want it to mean. Hitler brought about change to Germany. Was it good? Huh? He came into power. He said, I'm going to change things in Germany. Germany's paying reparations. Germany is humiliated. I'm going to change things in Germany. Well, the Germans love that campaign slogan of change that old Adolf used. Well, look at the change they got. They got death camps in a world war that wiped out 50 million people. Watch out for those who want to bring us change. The road to hell is paved with good intentions, but I'm not so sure of that even. I'm not so sure his intentions are so good. You hear it is? I happen to like guns. I happen to not like illegal immigrants. I don't like garbage products from China. And that's why I'll never vote for this far left elitist nutbag, this gas bag that only the Gettys on Pacific Heights could find entertaining. Of course, he doesn't think they found them entertaining. He thought they actually believed them. This is the Savage Nation. Go to michaelsavage.com. Check it all out. See if you agree with me or disagree with me. And I'll see you Monday, right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.